is, everyone, when it comes to something like this, I think everybody understands that. No one is really to speak about Reuven Lipsteinman. All we can do is somehow get a glimpse at what kind of a person he was and learn from that to take it into our own lives. I don't think it's shaykh to say that we can ever become somebody like Reuven Lip. This is not a... He was a very, very different person. I'm going to give you an example, just something that I read really quickly. There's so many stories that are coming out now that, of course, that's what ends up happening. But like one of the classic stories that just occurred was the story of where there was a baby who was, fortunately, the baby was born, everything was all good. The mole came, and the mole took one look at the baby and saw it. There's something wrong. He said, you should send it back to the hospital. We shouldn't have the meal tomorrow, the bris tomorrow. Let's figure out what's wrong with the baby. So they did. They brought him back to the hospital, and they realized that the baby had a very, very rare disease. I don't know, whatever, no reason. I don't remember what the disease was, but very rare disease. It was so rare, in fact, they couldn't treat it in Eretz Yisrael. They had no one in Eretz Yisrael that were experts on the matter, so they couldn't treat it in Eretz Yisrael. So the question was, should they take the baby to Boston, where that was the closest place, the closest medical center, where they had the expertise to be able to deal with the issue? The problem with bringing it to Boston is that the doctors said they didn't think that the baby was going to survive, if survive the trip there. And it's a tremendous expense. The amount of money they'd have to spend in order to bring it to Boston is just, it isn't worth it, unfortunately. It's just not worth it because it's probably not going to end up happening anyway. So the father went crying to Reuven Lip Steinman, somehow got in and went to Reuven Steinman. Reuven Steinman said, go to Boston. So he said, but the doctors told me not to. He said, you should go to Boston. So he went back to the doctors. The doctors thought he was crazy. They thought Reuven Lip had no idea what he was talking about. He calls up Refuhrer. That's a Führer, I think his name is. Tremendous medical expert in Eretz Yisrael. And he told him everything. Refuhrer looked into the case and said, why are you going to Boston? The kid isn't going to make it. And he said, Reuven Lip told me to go. So Refuhrer went in with all of his people over to Reuven Steinman and said, why are you telling him to go? It's not going to happen. To which Reuven Steinman said, they said themselves, the doctors said themselves, that they're not experts in this matter. They're not experts to know whether the baby's going to live or die. Meaning normally we'd go with a chazaka or, you know, whatever it is that the doctors are saying, and they know what they're talking about, so you got to go with what the doctors say. Doctors say they don't know what they're talking about. So they don't know what they're talking about. How can we listen to them? So this is sakanas nefashos. We have to do everything we can. So he came up with that chap. They sent him over to Boston. The child did survive. The child had the surgery. And everything was, I don't know, but at the end, you know. That man was Rebel Yashiv. I don't know the ending of that story. You have absolutely no idea. But the point is that Reuven Steinman made it. So here's the chap behind the story. It's not that Reuven Steinman came up with that idea. That's a good chap, but that's not the real thing behind it. I'm surprised because really Reuven Steinman stayed away from those types of psukim. That's not something that I heard that Reuven Steinman did. But either way, right, he said that. And then the father, a couple months later, 6 months later, whatever it was, they were ready to give a bris to the child. So he went to Reuven Steinman and said, could the Rav please be the Reshiva, I should say, be the mole? Yeah, the mole, the Sandik at the bris. Can you be the Sandik? To which Reuven Steinman said, no. And he said, why? Here's the chap. Listen to what kind of a person Reuven Steinman was. He said, there was someone that you had already appointed as the Sandik on the seventh day. It was the seventh day when you found out that you shouldn't do it, right? So you already had in mind, and you probably already told someone that he was going to be the Sandik. That person has been davening for the last 6 months for this child to be able to have a refuah shleima so he could be the sandik. And then all of a sudden, I step in and I'm the sandik in his place. Do you know how bad he's going to feel? Give it to the person that you were going to give it to 6 months ago. I don't want anything to change. Do you see what kind of a person Reuven Lip Steinman is? For me to say that, it's either false modesty or because I do too many sandikos. That's the reason why I'm doing it. I just have to, I'm a sandik quite a bit of times. I don't need to do it again. You know, something like that. To think of that chap, the reason why I don't want to be sandik is because that person is going to feel bad. That's the type of person that he is. That means. When I first walked into Reuven Steinman's apartment when I was 18 years old, I was absolutely shocked. And I think this goes by anyone who had no idea who this person was. You walk into his house, you could not believe that a person survives like this, exists like this. Swearing off every bit of physical pleasure that a person could have, he had no sugar. Didn't have any bit of sugar. Comfortable beds. You ever see his bed? His bed is the tiniest Israeli mattress you've ever seen before in your life. The tiniest. Now, granted, you spend enough time. It's like this thick. You know, you spend an hour or two on it. What's the big deal? Tiny little thing. He didn't have painted walls. His walls were peeling and cracked. Anyone who's been there knows it was a disgusting apartment. You wouldn't wish it upon your enemy. All the sink fixtures are all from the 1940s, the original fixtures that they put in. They look like the little things that you pour into barrels, not like a regular sink. He's living like it's 1543 in 2010 B'nai Brak, right? Now, again, it's B'nai Brak, but nonetheless. So I sat there as an 18-year-old kid, and I walked inside, and I asked myself the question, why would a person do this? Why would he do this? It doesn't make any sense to me. Why would it? Now, if you don't have the money whatsoever and you're extremely poor, I get it. But Steinman was a Rosh Yeshiva. He made at least $1,000 a year. At least. He didn't even have his own Sfarim. All the Sfarim that he had were given to him for free from the author. That's all he had. Did anybody know that? That's what I was told. I don't know if it's true or not. But every single one is like one of those like Pidin Aben books and like Bris Mila books. There's nothing. There's like one, I think there's a piecemeal Shas that he put together. And nothing else is his farm. Instead, I'll go to Bate Midrash and I'll have this farm there. What do I need a farm shank at home? I need Gemaras at home, so he had Gemaras at home. And everything else is just like little things that he put inside there. It didn't make any sense to me. And again, if you're really poor, that's one thing. But people would have done anything for Rosh Steinman, and it wouldn't have taken away from their tzedakah activities. It's not like you say, look, if I gave Rosh Steinman $1,000 to paint his apartment, his one bedroom apartment, one kitchen room and then living room. If I would have given him $1,000, then I wouldn't give any more money to tzedakah. No, people would have given him $1,000 because it was Rosh Steinman. Clearly that happened toward the end of his life with the medical bills and everything. When I couldn't come up with an answer, I sat there and I said, I realized there's something wrong with me. Because this doesn't make any sense. And if I'm not getting it at all, there's nothing there, there's something wrong with my way of thinking. And the truth is, we were Zohar Eva Tzadik, a person who was living in Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh, and I saw it with my own eyes. How much I wish I would have gone there right before I just wish. So my Rebbe, Rav Eli Levin, put together something, and he came up with something like, what are we really missing with Rosh Steinman's death? He was an 104-year-old man. He had very, very little abilities to speak or to deal with other people toward the end of his life. There's very little left. What are we missing when an 104-year-old man passes away? So he brings down a Gemara with Choni Amagel. Everybody knows the Choni Amagel story with the circle, right? The Habakkuk type story, right? Right, Habakkuk story with, you know, where he stood in the circle and asked for rain. The next Gemara goes into the Rip Van Winkle story. Well, Choni Amagel was asleep for 70 years, and after 70 years, he woke up, right? And he approached his town, came to his town in the Beis Medrash. Everybody noticed things were different. Right, and they said in the Beis Medrash, today the sugya is as klar as it was in the days of Choni Amagel. He'd been gone for 70 years, and he comes back, and all of a sudden there's a clarity of mind that Choni Amagel was able to bring to them in the Beis Medrash that was not there since Choni Amagel was gone. They were unaware that Choni was back, unaware that he was alive, unaware that Choni Amagel was approaching. They just said the line of, this is as clear as it was in the days of Choni Amagel. Now, what does that mean exactly? That means that the presence of a person like Choni Amagel gave you a clarity of mind to think and see things and say things that are greater than you can possibly imagine. There's like a shefa of havana, of understanding that came into the world because Choni Amagel was there, that allowed them to understand more. And automatically, all the Talmidim of the Yeshiva, who never saw Choni, they had no sheiches to Choni Amagel. It was 70 years ago the last time Choni Amagel was around. His grandson was alive and was still very, very old. And even then, they were able to say, now we're on a level that we haven't been in. We feel like we're on the level of Choni Amagel. So Monday night of last week, we went to sleep in a world that had Rav Aaron Leib Steinman in it. Torah was clear in a way. You were connected back to a person who saw Rav Baruch Ber, who learned under the Gedolim of Europe, who was able to see things and hear things and understand things. And that causes us, born in 1913, the people that he saw, the people that he was with, he was a pure connection back to a world where there was clarity in Torah learning, where there were Talmidei Chachamim that we can't imagine being in our world today. As great as the Talmidei Chachamim are, these Talmidei Chachamim were a different type. And we woke up on Tuesday and it was lost. There's no connection to that Olam HaTorah of 80 years ago. There's no more connection to Rav Baruch Ber. I'm not saying there aren't other Talmidim that were around that were connected to Rav Baruch Ber. But we lost Rav Aaron Leib Steinman's connection to Rav Baruch Ber, and with that came not a misora, we have the misora, but a connection, a chlorokite that's lost when he is gone. This neshama of Rosh Chaim was put aside for our world to access, for us to have an ability to do. It's a gift that we were given, a confused, detached people that were uninspired, uninvolved. We have Rav Shimon who was there, who was so involved and aware of every nuance of our sociology, of what happens in our world. We have a person who was so understanding of the different things that were happening in our world that he took a trip around the world to see everybody and to give them a little bit of chizuk, to let them see a gadol, which they might not have ever seen otherwise. People in the middle of Cincinnati, in Skokie Yeshiva, in LA, in other places in New York and Florida, they might never see a gadol of his stature, and he knew it. And he came and showed himself to them. A person who understands that type of thing, and yet still lived, with all of this knowledge, lived like it was 1914 in pre-war Europe. That is a different type of person. He probably ate the same amount of calories that he did when he was 5 years old every single day. You could see it. He looked so thin. The same lack of furniture. He was just different. Yosef HaTzadik, when he was in Mitzrayim, dressed differently, right? And he looked like the Mitzrayim. But Chazal tell us that he was essentially and really the same Yosef as he was when he was shepherding the sheep of Yaakov Avinu. Yes, he looked different. He looked like an Egyptian. To the point where the Shvatim could be fooled by seeing such a person into thinking that he was Egyptian. And even though we know what were the things that Bnei Yisrael didn't do in Mitzrayim, they didn't change their names, they didn't change their language, they didn't change their clothing, Yosef HaTzadik had a different name, Tzofnas Paneach. He wore Egyptian clothing without a question, and he spoke the language of the Egyptians. And the likelihood is that his children did as well. That Menashe, for sure, he was the translator, so he definitely spoke Egyptian. And Ephraim, because of the Rabbi Yaakov, then maybe I spoke out, whatever, it could be. It seems to be that Rav Aaron Leib, as much as on the outside he showed that he's with it, he's with the times, he is exactly the same person as somebody who lived in pre-war Europe, who was sitting in those yeshivas and together with those gedolim. Same hashkafa, same hervana in learning, same getting involved, and an uncompromising, just his ability to adhere to absolute emes, to do exactly what was emes. That's somebody that's there. Round Leib, so to speak, was on a deserted island by himself. And there were people like him, but there was no one really like him. There was no one else who was close to that level. Engaged and yet totally away. Completely right that. And in that way, we had access to previous Doros through him. Not just through our learning. Not just through the Torah learning that Choni Amago had. We had it through him. And someone who lives in a world of Sheker can't appreciate that. If my goal, and I mean this, is to go to Disney World or to go to Disneyland, that's my goal. My eventual goal is to retire and go to Florida and be involved in the sheker that this world, the world has to offer. You can't appreciate a person like Ron Lynch Diamond. You walk into his apartment and you're shocked. Why? Why would a person live this way? Instead of asking the other question, this is the question that he didn't ask when I'm 18. Why am I living the other way? Why am I living with everything that I have? Why do I need all this stuff? I'm not asking that question because it's too hard for me. When you live in that world, you have those types of questions. And it's silly. It's just silly. The other thing that comes with Ron Leib Steinman, which is completely different from the years before, is the greatest gift that our generation has had. And I mean it this way because it's scary to say this. Our generation, how many people do you think met the Chassam Sofer in his time? How many people do you think actually saw the Chassam Sofer's face? They might have written to him, right? They might have read his Torah. But in the generation of the Chassam Sofer, how many people were there and actually saw the Chassam Sofer? How many people? A couple thousand? A couple thousand at best? How many? I would say very, very few. How many people were involved with the Vilna Gaon? How many people saw the Vilna Gaon? Anything? Like, you'd have his Talmidim, but nobody was allowed in toward the end of his life. You'd have nothing. Yet our Gidolim, in our world that we're on, their Torah, their personas, what they hold, their different opinions and everything, it's available for you whenever you want. It's so funny. I'm listening to Rabbi First talk about different contemporary topics. There's a shiur the Rabbi First gives for Rabbanim in the city. And I'm listening to him give over these topics. And there's so many times where he'll quote these random svarim that are just like, I asked Rav Elyashiv and he told me the following. Like Ashrei Ish from Rav Elyashiv. From the Chazon Ish, the different svarim that are written on the Chazon Ish or the Stipler, right? Or from even Rav Moshe, Mesoris Moshe. So people just asked the questions and they were able to get the answers. And they were so accessible. Who here has not seen that video of Rav Elyashiv getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning? Have you seen it? You didn't see it. Why wouldn't you see it? Have you watched any other videos over the last year and a half? Why wouldn't you watch this video? You have an ability to see Rav Elyashiv getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning because some mechutzif sat down underneath his little whatever, underneath one of the tables, and took a video camera out and took a video of Rav Elyashiv getting up at 3 in the morning, which he does every single day, and starting his 18 hours of learning per day, sitting there and learning a Gemara with his finger on the place like a little kid in fifth grade. We have access that no one else had because we are such mechutzafim, right? We have chutzpah like no one's business, and we have video cameras, and we have cameras. That is absolutely amazing. There's nothing like that. Can you imagine that we have something that they don't have? Did you see the video of the Chafetz Chaim? Did you watch the Chafetz Chaim? How many people you think saw the Chafetz Chaim? How many people had access to the Chafetz Chaim? Again, there might have been more because trains and Chafetz Chaim traveled and people wanted to see him wherever they went. But there were very few people who were able to see the Chafetz Chaim with that face, the way that our generation is, even though we didn't live in our generation. That's unbelievable. We see him walking, barely. It's, you know, cameras from the 20s, it's not really. I see him walking. That's unbelievable. How many people saw the fight between Rav Bakst and who was it? Rav Birnbaum, right, at the wedding. You guys see that video? I think it was the only reason why YouTube was ever created. It's Rav Birnbaum and Rav Bakst fighting about migu in the middle of a wedding, everything else going on, people, person in the background is eating his soup, like that, and they are, well, I shouldn't say it, not both of them. Rav Bakst is screaming at Rav Birnbaum, screaming at him. We have this access that no one else had. We have something that's it. It is a chiddush. It's a chiddush for our needy generation. We need to see our gedolim in that way because we can't process without it. How do I know he's a real gadol? Maybe he's not. I don't know. We don't think things through this way. We had the ability to daven. I did six times. I think I saw Rosh Hashanah. I'd have to go through it. I'd have to really think about it. But I know I saw him at least six times. I was in Rebbetzin Knievsky's kitchen talking to the Rebbetzin where Aaron Leib Steinman called her up to ask for a bracha before going to a bris. He was going to a bris. He was going to be sandik at a bris, and he called up the Rebbetzin to ask for a bracha. And she turned to me afterward and said, "He calls me all the time for a bracha. Calls me all the time. Said he should be a good sandik for the bris." And she smiled and she said, like he needs my bracha. Right? I was there. I sat there. I heard this. I was part of that conversation. The part of the conversation was like, That's my part in it. That's what I was able to get involved with. But I was there. I saw it. I saw a person on that stature calling up a girl. And it wouldn't make the Torah, right? In today's generation, it wouldn't make it, right? But calling up a girl to ask her for a bracha to be able to be a son to get a bris. It's unbelievable. It's something that we need. And it's a chesed, an unbelievable chesed, that we have total access to do this. It's the same way that all of our previous generations never had the ability to learn in Eretz Yisrael, to learn and sit and learn for a year in Eretz Yisrael, whether you took advantage of it correctly or not. You got to learn in Eretz Yisrael. You got to go to the coastal. You got to stand by the area of the Beis Hamikdash. How many generations wished that they could do such a thing, would give up their lives to do it, were willing to be moser nefesh to stand by the coastal? And we sit there and we're like, yeah, whatever, it's a wall. Imagine, it's unbelievable to go through the tunnel tours and to be in that spot. This is the king himself is speaking to us and telling us through this generation, I want to have a relationship with you. I, the king, I will give you access to my palace, and that's the Kosel. I will give you access to my closest ministers, to the people like Rav Elyashiv, to Rosh Steinman Zatzal, and to the Gedolim of today. And please The Melech is begging us, just find the time and the emotional energy to get as close to me as you possibly can. Get rid of all those other fantasies of what you want to do when you live your life and just sit there and say, here's what I want you to do. Meet me, says the king, in a Shmona Esrei. Meet me in a Tosfos. Meet me somewhere. But I'm giving you that access, my palace, my ministers, to me. Now just take one step forward. This really sums up Hanukkah in that one word. It's the access. We are given access to a madriga that we have never had before. We cannot lose this this access that we have. We have to take advantage of it as much as we can. If there are other gedolim that we have the ability to see, we have to go see them. That's what they're there for. That's why they're allowing us to come inside and see them, or to go out and see them. Don't squander it on a jelly donut. That's missing the point. Find that, and take it for yourself, and grab it for yourself, and take advantage. Again, the worst thing is to go back to Eretz Yisrael for the last time and not try to see Rosh Chodesh. 2 times ago I did, and I went to Bnei Brak to go see him. This time I didn't, and I lost out. I lost out on the seventh opportunity to be able to get that connection back. I'll never get it again, obviously. It's not there anymore. See what we can do. See where you can get it. And try to think about this. Think about that access. Think of who you could see, how you could do this. And that should show you what we're missing now. Now the Rosh Chodesh is gone. All right, everyone. Have a good week.